Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Lauren Tenney, and this is the Talk with Tenney Show. I hope you've all had a great day out there today. This is an open lines call-in show, so if you'd like to call in and be part of the program, area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line, the number to call is area code 855-346-3351. I hope you won't leave me out here talking to myself in public for too long tonight. This isn't anything goes show, and so whatever's on your mind, feel free to call in. One of the things I did write is that, you know, people have lots to type about on Facebook, and I would love to move it into a live, in the moment, conversation where people can actually maybe talk with each other and come to maybe some new understandings about things. While we're waiting to see if anybody's going to call in, I want to bring your attention to an article that Larry Drain wrote by HopeWorks Community. And it's entitled On the Fraud of Murphy. And I think it's definitely worth a read. Larry Drain writes, the Murphy bill has gotten a free pass on one issue, both by those who have issue with it and those who support it. He paints the crisis in the mental health system in the broadest strokes with incredible numbers. 300,000, quote, mentally ill in jail, et cetera. Then he offers his solutions. Some of his ideas are other people's. He has tried to, quote, buy support by including ideas that have a lot of support, like the Garrett Smith legislation. The ideas that are his and the core of the problem, nationalization of AOT, increased psychiatric hospitalization, destruction of SAMHSA, and destruction of protection and advocacy programs. The fair question, putting aside questions of the ethics of his bill, is does what he recommends have any likelihood of really affecting a problem the magnitude Larry, I apologize for botching your writing here. The fair question, putting aside questions of the ethics of his bill, is does what he recommends have any likelihood of really affecting a problem the magnitude of which he describes? The answer, I think, is clear and a resounding no. His bill is a fraud, at the best a pseudo-solution that is likely to make real solutions even harder. I'm reading from Larry Drain's HopeWorks Community blog on the fraud of Murphy. So Larry Drain continues to write, AOT in New York serves 2,000 of the 685,000 people in the system. If you do the math, that turns out to be a third of 1%. That would seem to indicate a couple of things to me. One, Larry writes, the biggest problem is not people refusing treatment. That doesn't even begin to account for the amount of, quote, mentally ill in jail. It is simply a distortion of the truth to claim otherwise. If it shows anything, it would seem to indicate that the treatment many have received is not always very effective. I also want to just add in here, you know, as a New Yorker, part of the problem of Kendra's law, the involuntary outpatient commitment law in New York State, the assisted outpatient treatment program, is that the person who it was based off of, his actions, would not have qualified for the law because he routinely sought out assistance and was routinely refused by the system. Okay, so back to Larry's article. Two, it would seem fair to ask if criminal behavior is something more than a symptom of, quote, mental illness. If it is for people without mental health issues, is it not also true for people with mental health issues? Doesn't it seem remarkably simple-minded to ignore issues like poverty, unemployment, racism, gang involvement, and many others, and insist it can be taken care of by the right medication? Excellent point. Here's another big number. It costs $32 million a year to serve 2,000. What would it cost to serve many times that amount? And in the end, would that money not have been taken already from existing programs? And how then can the issue of developing more effective services even begin to be addressed? 4, there is no indication in any of the 44 states that have AOT that it can ever be anything than a minimal part of the mental health system, or that there is really a need for it to be more than a minimal part of the system. And 5, Representative Murphy has gotten a free ride with his dubious use of statistics. He claims that 50% of those with serious mental illness have anosognosia. You look at New York and do the math with Murphy's figures, there should be 380,000 with anosognosia. There are 2,000 in AOT. Where are the other 378,000 people? People who spout nonsense with a PhD behind their name are still full of nonsense. Amen, Larry Drayton. And 6, it matters what you commit people to. There is nothing in the Murphy bill that recognizes that. Committing someone to ride in a car with no gas will not get them anywhere they want to go. Larry continues, psychiatric hospitalization is an equally questionable answer. It is way too little bang for way too little buck. It costs way too much and does way too little for too few. The Tennessee experience is that it leaves the community system in poverty and stripped of resources. Even the people who work in state hospitals would quarrel with the idea that more beds are the answer to what ails. The psychiatric hospitalization ship sailed a long time ago. Murphy is a lie for Tennessee. If passed tomorrow, nothing would be better. You see, Representative Murphy has no idea what is wrong. And so, again, Larry Drayton on HopeWorks Community, the blog, and I think that really deserves some attention. Again, if you'd like to call in and join in this discussion with me so I'm not out here talking to myself in public, area code 267-521-0167. Area code 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free line, area code 855-346-3351. So some other things that have been of discussion is that I saw, and I mean no harm by doing this, but I saw that Representative Patrick Kennedy is going to be one of the keynote speakers at the Alternatives Conference in Florida this year. And that has caused a storm of conversation on my Facebook page. And I think that I posted it because I, of course, have a concern about that. Kennedy, who is outspoken about his own experiences with drugs and psychiatric labeling, and has a book coming out in 2015, I might remind people, is a huge proponent of what I heard him say on a talk show one morning, that everyone needs a checkup from the neck up. And I think that this is a real issue for our movement, and that this is somebody who is pushing these laws and bringing this forward. So just to look at this March 23rd article in the Washington Post by Stephen Livingston. It's, a style blog. Former U.S. Congressman Patrick J. Kennedy to publish memoir in 2015. And so Livingston writes, former U.S. Congressman Patrick J. Kennedy will write a book about his struggles with mental illness and his political and personal battles to ease the stigma for Americans suffering from the disease, Blue Rider Press announced. The book, quote, A Common Struggle, A Very Personal Journey Through the Past and Future of Mental Illness and Addiction, will, a common struggle, will be, right, because Kennedy is common, right? I'm sorry, I mean no disrespect, will be published in late 2015. Kennedy, the youngest son of Senator Edward Kennedy, was elected to the Rhode Island legislature in 1988 while a sophomore at Providence College, and later served 16 years as Rhode Island's Democratic representative in Congress. His troubles, Stephen Livingston continues in this Washington Post blog, his troubles with drug addiction, alcoholism, and mental illness have a long history. As a teenager, he was treated for cocaine use. Later, he revealed his battle with bipolar disorder, also known as manic depression. In, wow, Washington Post, eh? In 2006, he crashed his car into a barrier outside the Capitol around 2 a.m. while high on prescription drugs, a public embarrassment that spurred him to go public with his addiction to prescription drugs. He also checked himself into the Mayo Clinic for treatment. Now, I'm just going to pause here for a second. Washington, D.C., shooting No, it wasn't Alexis. Who was the woman who was drove into a barrier? The woman who drove into the barrier in D.C. and then was shot to death. October 24, 2013. The woman shot to death this month after Washington police chased her car from the White House to the Capitol, twice told authorities in Connecticut that the president had been had her home under electronic surveillance. Not the point. Miriam Carey was her name, who banged into the Post at the White House on October 3rd. So this is, where is this out of? The LA Times, I'm reading from. On October 3rd, the 34-year-old Carey, a former dental employment agent, drove erratically around the streets of Washington with her daughter in the car, finally being shot to death after bumping a barricade and striking a Secret Service officer near the White House and Capitol. Okay, so that was just all I was looking at there, because this is a common struggle, right? So I think it's just really important that we knock this out. So in 2006, he crashed his car into a barrier outside of the Capitol around 2 a.m. Patrick Kennedy did not get shot dead. While high on prescription drugs, a public embarrassment that spurred him to go public with his addiction to prescription drugs. Again, nothing psychiatric here, right? Kennedy has since worked hard to put a public spotlight on addiction and mental illness and to push for the passage of the 2008 Mental Health Parity Act that requires health insurance plans to provide equal coverage for physical and mental illnesses. Kennedy states in this Washington Post article, I look forward to sharing my political and personal story in a way that engages everyone involved with the, quote, common struggle of mental illness and addiction, which affects all of us, Kennedy said in a statement. The former representative has long posed the mental illness debate as a civil rights issue, arguing that stigma attached to those suffering from mental health crises is akin to the prejudice encountered by African Americans and gays in an earlier era of his Uncle John F. Kennedy by Irish Catholics. Kennedy left Congress in 2010 and in 2011 co-founded an organization for brain research called One Mind. He describes his book as a portrait of mental health care, politics, research, and activism. This guy is dangerous, and the fact that he's keynoting and opening up the keynote of the Alternatives Conference in the SAMHSA-funded Alternatives Conference. Let's hear Murphy here.
It's SAMHSA for leading an anti-psychiatry movement. Do you have any comments on that with regard to SAMHSA providing money or grants to groups that fight treatment or discourage?
Yeah, right, because that's what we're doing, right? But this is SAMHSA, the anti-psychiatry movement that is, putting Patrick Kennedy of One Mind doing brain research all over the place. And again, no disrespect to Patrick Kennedy, but I think just some real information and education about what is a civil rights movement and how this mental patients liberation movement, which back in the 60s and 70s was seen just like any other liberation movement, and really repositioning that and getting that information out there. I understand people are talking about maybe having some kind of blog or something, not blog, what's the right word, petition or something to express a rejection of Patrick Kennedy leading off the alternatives when what he supports is very much the same old thing. And so, I don't know, anybody have anything to say about this? And anybody want to talk to me or this or anything else? Anything goes tonight. Area code 267-521-0167 to call in. 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line, area code 855-346-3351. So, I don't know. We're still up against Murphy, and Murphy thinks that people who are labeled with, what he calls, quote-unquote, serious mental illnesses, all think that they are the angel of Gabriel or Jesus or something. You don't believe me? Here's his own words. Listen to this.
If you're having a stroke, you need to get to the hospital. The person may say, it's no big deal. I don't know what that's all about. That's anosognosia. About 40 to 50% of people with severe mental illness, schizophrenia, if shown a videotape of them hallucinating, delusional, they don't know who they are. They think they're an angel Gabriel, Jesus, whatever else. And they say, do you think that's okay? They'll say, sounds okay to me. I don't understand the problem. What is Thompson's referring to for those people who are not capable of making decisions on their own, to have someone else assist them so that they have a right to get better? Would you agree that such persons may need some assistance that they're not capable of making on their own?
Yeah, we're not capable of making these decisions on our own. It's just not possible. It's absolutely not it's not something that's within our grasp. We need these good doctors to tell us what it is that we're supposed to do with our lives, whether or not we can go to school, whether or not we can get married, whether or not we can have families, whether or not we can choose to take medication or not, whether we can do anything, really. And what a fraud. What a total fraud. Like somebody who, because somebody is a, medical doctor, while at the same time, like psychiatrists, right, the only doctors in the world who are not ever held responsible for anything actual physical in the body. And so why, on some levels, on top of the drugs, obviously, that we're given, why are we dying 25 to 30 years sooner than other people? Because these psychiatrists are absolved from having to look at any actual medical issues that people might have. And it just, it really is of great, great concern. Again, if you'd like to call in and talk to me, the number is area code 267-521-0167, 267-521-0167. I'm hoping that the show is going on and that people can hear out there. I called in a second late, and sometimes that screws up the entire thing. So I'm hoping that that didn't happen. But if you'd like to call in, area code 267-521-0167. Then there was this other interesting clip, and this is all, these clips that I'm playing are all from the hearings that were held on H.R. 3717. Tim Murphy's Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act, which I guess I should just mention. There's been a real push for people to go to Murphy's page on Facebook and to make comments there and to, make your voices heard. I was barred from Murphy's page, so I'm no longer allowed to comment. He's got some kind of control set on me that prevents me from being able to do that. But I deeply would suggest others to continue to post up there for as long as you can until you get blocked. I know that there were a couple of other people who also got blocked for doing this, and so we need to keep on pushing the reality of what's being being misguided when in terms of what Murphy is talking about. Here's another clip of Murphy talking with Ms. Zadonovitz at that hearing, again about SAMHSA being anti-psychiatry, which is the biggest laughable thing that I've ever heard in my life.
Last question here I want to address it to Ms. Zadonovitz. Dr. Stern called the journal editorial a gross mischaracterization, and that SAMHSA for leading an anti-psychiatry movement. What do you have any comments on that with regard to SAMHSA providing money or grants to groups that fight treatment or discourage?
Yes, and in fact, I have read many of the state applications for grants from SAMHSA, CMHS, and when you read those, you find very little reference to the most severely ill. Much of it is about, this is how we're going to get people out of state psychiatric hospitals. It's about how we're going to, if we just offer people, you know, what they want and make sure that we're really nice to them, that they're going to be just fine and it's going to settle their symptoms. But the question is, well, what if what the person wants is a semiotic, you know, machine gun to shoot you because they think that you are the devil?
Yeah.
Well, then what do you do?
Yeah.
Well, then you call the police. And
I mean, this is literally in the federal government hearings on H.R. 3717. This is literally the testimony that's being given by these people who are considered supposed experts on the situation. Yeah, and you know what? If you just treated people well and you helped them get what it is that they want and need, and you stop assigning things that are economic in nature to things that are psychiatric, like how many more times are we going to, as a society, listen to these people say, well, psychiatry can end homelessness? Psychiatry cannot end homelessness. Homelessness is an issue of economics, not an issue of some, phantom, supposed disease that exists. When are we going to start holding these legislators and supposed experts accountable for what it is that they are putting out there? This is just, oh, wow, a whole bunch of people just came online. I'm hoping that you all heard what I've been talking about throughout the night. So maybe whatever was going on with the computer just resolved itself. But hi, folks. I hope all is good. But I'm serious. How long are we going to allow legislators and people who stand to benefit from psychiatry, perpetuating itself, and psychology perpetuating itself, that, you know, that somehow a psychiatry, if we funded psychiatry, that would get rid of homelessness, or that, you know, that there's any legitimate link between violence and something that is considered quote-unquote psychiatric. As a society, how long are we going to allow these people to be making these kinds of statements? Like what Zadonowicz said, this is actual testimony on H.R. 3717.
They think that you are the devil.
Yeah.
The devil.
Yeah.
The devil.
Yeah.
The devil.
Yeah.
I mean, they think that you're the devil. This is legitimate testimony in 2014. Why is nobody holding these people responsible for it? Murphy included.
I don't know who they are. They think they're the angel Gabriel, Jesus, whatever else.
Why is this legitimate? I that's what I want to know. I want to know why is this legitimate? Why is using things like they think they're the angel of Gabriel or Jesus, or they think you're the devil, legitimate in the eyes of our society, that this should be allowing people to tramp on our civil liberties in the way that they are, with the way that this is happening? If you have something to say about this or anything else, the number to call in is area code 267-521-0167. 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line, the number is 855-346-3351. You know, here's the interchange with Murphy and Shern again at this hearing. Again, this is at a public hearing based on this law that is going to change like 8 different kinds of law in the United States, cost billions of dollars, rearrange all kinds of things, and cut out things like protection and advocacy and as you know, Larry Drain wrote in his article, nationalize AOT, involuntary outpatient commitment.
Do you think in the alternatives conference, which spends about $600,000 a year of taxpayers' money, do you think we should be paying for conferences that have things called Unleash the Beast, Primal Movement Workshop, How to Make Collages, Dancing, Interpretive Yoga, or How to Stop Taking Medication? Do you think taxpayers should pay for that?
I think it's very important that we have an open...
I'm asking, do you think taxpayers should pay for those items? When we're so short on funds, do you think we should be paying for that, for people who have severe mental illness?
I think that it's very important that we have an open forum to discuss the very...
I appreciate that. I didn't ask you about an open forum. So I'm going to take that as a yes, and you're afraid to say yes.
Yeah, and then Shern just laughs. Murphy says, you're afraid to say yes. You're afraid of what? Who, in testifying about a potential law, about potential legislation that will become law, that he needs to be afraid to say this? And this all over $600,000, the Alternatives Conference, $600,000, this is what Murphy is making a stand on? Like, we're trillions of dollars into $600,000? And, you know, why is Murphy saying to this Dr. Shern, you know, that you're afraid to say yes, that you're afraid to say it's true? And if Shern is afraid to say it's true, why is he afraid to say it's true? And then laughs about it in testimony. Here we go again.
I didn't ask you about an open forum, so I'm going to take that as a yes, and you're afraid to say yes. You know, in SAMHSA's, no, it's true. Come on, I want to have an open discussion.
Yeah, an open discussion. Murphy wants an open discussion. Murphy wants an open discussion with himself. He is the most uninterested. He is absolutely and completely uninterested in hearing from anybody and refuses to respond. This is almost, I'd say, 3 or 4 days, business days, that I am currently awaiting a response from his press secretary about this clip that he had said on NPR. Now, I have edited this in several ways just to hit the point home, but I did not edit out its content or original meaning of where he was talking about his frustration because of the way the system is and that he needs to do something and that, you know, people are dying with their rights on. And he's seen too many of his patients died. And I called his office, and I'm waiting for his press secretary to get back to me because I'd like to know how many of his patients died. And or is that just a lie that's being used in order to pull human heartstrings in order to push this, as if he himself? And again, you know, how many people in Murphy's care have died?
I was going to do something. Because Adam Lanz and Rowan and the other people who have nowhere to go, who have not gotten treatment, who have not gotten a diagnosis, are out there dying with their rights on. Are you kidding me? I have seen too many of my patients die. Adam Lanz and Rowan and the other people who have nowhere to go,
And so, and so, what are we looking at? The Adam Lanzes in the world and all these other people who have not gotten treatment, not gotten a diagnosis, are out there dying with their rights on. Are you kidding me? Like, that's what he's saying. He's not even talking about people who have been psychiatrically labeled. He's talking about people who have not been psychiatrically labeled that they're dying with their rights on. I'm sorry. I thought that this was the United States of America. Perhaps the corporation has changed things. But last I checked, like, you know, that we had this thing called freedom of speech and freedom in period. And not to mention that, like, the United Declaration of Human Rights, the very first article is that we have freedom of conscience and the ability to reason and have conscience. And yet, you know, he's throwing this thing out there as, you know, people who have not been diagnosed are dying with their rights on, but he's seen too many of his patients died. And last I checked, that somebody who is a quote-unquote patient is somebody who has been treated and diagnosed. And so, you know, I'm not sure, I guess it's okay to die as a patient. It's just not okay to die with your rights. So frustrating. If you'd like to talk about this or anything else, the number to call in is area code 267-521-0167. Area code 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line, area code 855-346-3351. I also would like to remind people about on endofshock.com, I think it is, endofshock.com, I believe. On endofshock.com, if you scroll down a little bit halfway down the page, on the right side of the page, there is a new pamphlet about the truth about electroshock, ECT, or electroconvulsive therapy, called Entering the Gray Zone. And you can download it for free there, and it has a phenomenal amount of information. It's a really important thing. And so there's a table of contents that kind of walks you through everything that's inside of the pamphlet. And, you know, the very first thing that you'll see in where it talks about, are you being asked to consider ECT therapy? Are you being asked to consider undergoing psychiatric procedure of electroshock, commonly referred to as electroconvulsive therapy or ECT? If so, please consider the following information before signing an informed consent to treat with ECT form. You have a right to refuse ECT. And it continues, your label. Are labeled as, quote, mentally ill, diagnosed with a particular, quote, disease for which ECT is being recommended as, quote, treatment. ECT is being justified as, quote, treatment based on the assertion that your, quote, disease, probably called depression, but possibly some other, quote, disease such as bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, is a biologically or genetically based illness. Your label as, quote, mentally ill and diagnosis as, quote, major depression or other mental illness, quote, mental illness, is entirely hypothetical based on subjective reports and observations of mood and behavior. There is no evidence of disease, chemical imbalance, or anything physically or chemically abnormal to validate your diagnosis as a mental illness. And I just think that this pamphlet is so, so important, and there were, you know, a lot of really great people who went into putting this together and getting the information out. And, you know, like, it's important for people to know. It talks about what the procedure actually is. I just want to bounce over here for one second. My computer is jamming. What else is new? I just want to find the, where'd my dashboard go? That's what I want to do. I lost my dashboard. Oh, geez, I hope I haven't lost you all. So I'm just trying to, sorry, live radio folks, bear with me for one second, if you would. That's always my fault for not setting up a complete fresh window. So I lost the station for a minute. But part well, this is getting through. Okay, you're still there. So part of what this electroshock informed consent you know, information package, thanks, I'm just getting text message saying that we're still here. Great, thank you. So part of what it talks about is the procedure. So for those people who don't know that electroshock, A, still gets done, B, is used on children, is court-ordered on adults, and is most often used on women who are senior citizens, to understand that the procedure is that quote, electroshock involves the production of a grand mal convulsion similar to an epileptic seizure by passing from 70 to 600 volts of electric current through the brain for 0.5 to 4 seconds. Before application, ECT subjects are typically given anesthetic, tranquilizing, and muscle-paralyzing drugs to reduce fear, pain, and the risk from violent muscle spasms of fractured bones, particularly of the spine, a common occurrence in the earlier history of ECT before the introduction of muscle paralyzers. The ECT convulsion usually lasts from 30 to 60 seconds and may produce life-threatening complications such as apnea and cardiac arrest. The convulsion is followed by a period of unconsciousness of several minutes' duration. Electroshock is usually administered in hospitals because they are equipped to handle emergency situations, which often develop during or after an ECT session. Administration of ECT also varies enormously in number of treatments, from one to literally hundreds over time. A typical course of treatment involves 6 to 12 sessions. Multiple monitored ECT is one variation which consists of 3 treatments in one session, spaced about 5 minutes apart, with 3 sessions in 1 week, thus 9 treatments in 1 week. Two important pieces of information to know are that, one, the natural electrical activity of the brain is measured in millivolts or thousandths of a volt. Thus, the power of ECT is literally hundreds of thousands of times greater than the natural brain electrical activity. And two, the average ECT procedure involves a level of electricity that can range from the minimal level required to induce a convulsion up to 40 times greater than that. The official APA recommendation ranges from 1.5 to 3 times greater than that required to induce a convulsion. It's just horrifying. It really is just horrifying. Area code 646, your line is open.
Hey, Lauren, how you doing? It's Les.
Hey, Les, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Not much, just talking about the ECT-informed consent, the new pamphlet for people that gives some legitimate information if they're trying to make a decision, that can be found on endofshock.com on the lower
wow.
right-hand side of the page. What's
very
going
nice.
On with
well,
you?
Well, you know, I heard that Kennedy, I can't put Kennedy, really? You're going to have Mr. Let's support the Murphy bill and let's make sure we never legalize marijuana because alternatives? That'll be interesting. Let's see which room he goes to and finds everybody smoking pot.
Well,
really?
I don't know about that. That's not my bigger concern as much as his foundation to do brain research and his push for this being a biological brain disorder at the same time, like screaming about it being a civil rights issue. He needs some serious education. In that Washington Post article, it says he describes his book as a portrait of mental health care, politics, research, and activism. And so I feel like somebody should be edumacating him a little bit because...
Yeah, edumacation sounds about right.
I mean, I can't say I'm surprised, but, you know, at all of the choices of who's presenting at alternatives. It's just, you know, not surprising. But the idea that that Kennedy should lead off the conference and be the conference's opening keynote just seems a little off to me. And, of course, his idea that, you know, he's experienced a, quote, common struggle, I don't know how to...
What common struggle as rich as he is? Come on.
Well, I mean, I don't even think it's about money as much as it's about placement. I would say that there's probably very little commonness about his experience. And I think it's important to, you know, since this article, I would have never even known this probably if this article didn't point it out. But, you know, in 2006, he crashed his car into a barrier outside the Capitol, it says. And, you know, on October 3rd, 2013, Carrie, blah, 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 finally being shot to death after bumping a barricade. You know, so there's little, unfortunately, commonness, I think, in the experience. But it is a concern because he is a big proponent of both parity, the idea that things that are psychiatric are the same as things that are physical, and that those things need to be treated equally when there's not a drop of evidence that that is so, and the Murphy
right.
Bill. And the Murphy Bill.
And, yeah. And again, we're talking about someone like Murphy who is a dishonest broker. Yeah, it's one thing to negotiate with an honest broker. It's a very different animal to negotiate with a dishonest broker. And Murphy is a Tea Party-backed Republican. Okay.
Well, I don't
Murphy,
know. Is that so?
Yes. In the state of Pennsylvania, he is a Tea Party-backed Republican who believes in smaller government. Wants to change things. And
see,
I'm not sure about that. No, he's been in all kinds of news media as a Tea Party back to Republican.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, as recently as March 11th, 2014, there was an article about some, let me see here, because it said Mr. Murphy faced a Tea Party ally challenger, Evan Feinberg, in the district's 2012 primary, but beat him easily with 63% of the GOP vote compared to 37% for Mr. Feinberg. In the 2012 general election, Mr. Murphy ran ahead of his party's presidential nominee in the district. He carried it with 64% of the vote. Unclear.
Yeah, because in the National Washington Post and in the Huffington Post, he's been considered a Tea Party backed Republican. That's what they've listed him as. So this is a guy who believes in smaller government, allegedly. And yet, you know, I've had some folks who said to me, yeah, he believes in smaller government, provided you know, it doesn't have his own political agenda attached to it. And he's willing to obliterate states' rights for his own political agenda. There's a clear separation from federal, state, and individual rights. He's willing to obliterate those for the sake of the Murphy Bill. Problematic, really problematic. And then you get those, you know, that I talk to who say, well, you know, you can't use that to talk about that because that's what they use to justify slavery. Are you kidding me? Really?
Wait, I just missed what you said. What did you just say?
No, when you talk about states' rights, the argument for slavery was that states could have slavery because there was a separation of the federal government to the states. So states who wanted slavery were allowed to keep slavery as a result. So that's how you get almost the Mason-Dixon line divide. So they say, when I say that we should be talking about states' rights, what about the rights of the state? I get told you can't do that because that's the argument that would use to justify slavery.
Well, I don't know who the hell you're talking to. I'm a little confused, I guess, about what you're talking about. But again, and that's partially because I'm in two different places because I keep on looking for this. And every single article that I see is that he's been having to fight against the Tea Party.
Mm.
So I
that's
would.
Interesting.
I just think that we need to be really careful about where we're going. Maybe that's changed in more recent times because I'm not seeing a lot of more recent things than 2012, 2013. But, like, this is a classic establishment versus Tea Party fight, that kind of thing. So it would be interesting to see if anybody knows the answer to this. 267-521-0167. And obviously there's all kinds of political stuff going on in the midst of it. But the real problem here is that He is perpetuating a fraud on the American people by continuing to use this biomedical model as if there was a actual evidence base to it. I think we would be having a different conversation if they were more honest about the lack of evidence of what it is that they are putting forth. But they are not.
To me, that's what's more problematic, the fact that there is no honesty in the conversation. There's not one ounce of honesty, you know, which is problematic in and of itself.
I think it certainly is a deep problem. I'm just looking at this having some major computer issues here, Lester. It's just not working as well as it used to. But I think that, yeah. Okay, so here's something that we all should be concerned about if this thing opens up, about the relationship between Patrick Kennedy and Tim Murphy. And I hope that advertisements waiting in 15 seconds. They get you at every go around here. But I think that part of what this is looking at, this issue, I think that they co-introduced a bill on technology stuff that we all need to be concerned about. I think this is already a done deal. I don't think this is new. I think this is old. And I just lost the page. Oh, isn't live radio wonderful, folks?
Yes, it is.
Live radio.
So, are you talking about the electronic medical record stuff?
That is part of it, yes.
Yeah.
Because it seems they co-introduced that.
All I could think to myself when I found out in this opening keynote was, what the hell were they thinking?
Well, I would love to know what they were thinking. If anybody who's got any hand in this,
well,
would like
Rogers,
to talk to me.
I think should come on and answer to the community. What the hell was he thinking?
Well, it may not have
invited...
just been him. I think that's a broad brush to assume that it was, just him. Or that he had any ability to make this kind of decision. But I would like to invite anybody who was involved with this or who wants to talk about it to call in and, let your side be heard. 267-521-0167. Some people think that it's ridiculous that you have to, take down any level of, that nothing that they're saying should be taken that seriously anyway. Murphy is always suggesting that this is a anti-psychiatry campaign. It was a different Kennedy. It wasn't Patrick Kennedy. It was Brian Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
That put that forward, the electronic medical record stuff. But I do think either way we need to, unless Brian Kennedy and Patrick Kennedy are one and the same, and I'm just not aware of that. And that's the other thing. I think that, like, when everyday people start to, like, really look into what our government is doing and who's doing it and how all these situations get mushed in together, alternatives is not like, let's find the best new way to solve the brain problem, I don't think.
But I think And I think the whole anti-psychiatry thing is not true. I think it's more about choice or informed consent. And actually, when you do an informed consent well, in my opinion, is you make sure that the folks have access to talk to folks who've actually had the treatment. You were just talking about the ECT thing. Well, you know what? Yes, you should really tell someone the good, the bad, the ugly, and if you can arrange it, let that person talk to some people who've had some ECT. Both sides of it, good and bad, and then let them make their decision, and they have a right to that decision, whatever it is. And at that point, you support it because it's fully an informed consent. They're making a conscious choice. But that's like a one-size-fits-all model. And whether you're working in the industry or you're in the industry or however you look at it, people have a right to face a choice. You know, somebody wanted to compare this stuff to oncology or cardiology, and I said, in cardiology or oncology, I have no choice. Now, I hope you're the place I have no right to refuse. I have no right to refuse. Every right to say yes, but no right to say no.
But then you don't really have a right to say yes. It's a veil that if you can't say no, you really can't say yes.
That's right.
And I think that's something that Larry was pointing out the other night. Apparently, Brian Patrick Kennedy is Patrick Kennedy. I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. Anybody know this? 267-521-0167. I am in no way pretending that I know what's going on here. But I do know that Patrick J. Kennedy. No, it's got to be somebody different. It's just got to be a coincidence. It's just got to be a coincidence. I don't know.
I don't know what the answers are either.
But I do feel like, like the whole thing, I mean, it's just a loss anyway. I mean,
you know what I think we need to do psychiatric survivors need to get together. I know everybody needs to go find some Boy Scout camp that isn't being used anymore, or someplace up in the woods, and everybody needs to get some RVs and sleeping bags together, and we need to go camp out ourselves and organize.
Well, the alternatives to the alternatives conference is definitely an unnecessary thing. And I think that, you know, when you go back to the International Conference on Psychiatric Oppression and Human Rights that was going on prior to the alternative conference, that's part of where some of the anger that people have, I think, spurs from. This audacity of the way Kennedy would pose a civil rights movement just seems a little hard to swallow sometimes. And so I think that, you know, there's real, if you Google the International Conference on Psychiatric Oppression and Human Rights, you'll find all kinds of information about it. And one of the things that came out of that this was an international effort that had been going on. So by 1982, it was already the 10th International Conference on Human Rights and Psychiatric Oppression. And it was held in Toronto. And that's where the Declaration of Principles in 1982 were developed and put forth. And, one, we oppose involuntary psychiatric intervention, including civil commitments and the administration of psychiatric procedures, quote, treatments, by force or coercion or without informed consent. And that was the first one. And then it goes on for 30 points. And the 30th point, I wish other people were available to read this so that I don't just read it straight out again. But the you know, we demand 28. We demand an end to involuntary psychiatric intervention. 29, we demand individual liberty and social justice for everyone. And 30, we intend to make these words real and will not rest until we do. And so then you see things like the Alternatives Conference that are just a complete, you know, fraud and misinterpretation and misrepresentation of everything that had stood before. And then that they are somehow now, you know, that this is somehow, you know, in line with civil rights. Civil rights is creating a truly, like, an abolished system, not a system that is paid for equally, amongst other things that maybe themselves are isn't contentious in the realities. But I think we're in deep trouble as a society, because as this goes forward, we're just going to continue to lose more of our civil liberties, and everyone is at risk. It's not this small little group that is being gone
after. We are truly becoming Orwellian.
Well, post-Orwellian, probably.
Wow, George Orwell wanted this in 1984.
So I'm just getting a message. Representative Brian Patrick Kennedy, Rhode Island, chairperson of House Corporations Committee. And so this is different. So this is a different person than Patrick Kennedy. I mean, you need, in order to really do this successfully, you need an entire staff and people doing research 24 hours a day, trying to figure out what the hell is going on here. That's just my opinion, but. If you'd like to call in and be part of the program, 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. So we still don't know whether or not this is the same person or a different person, but it would seem...
It's going to make life really, really... If people don't do something about this, with him speaking at Alternative, this is not a good place to be in. It really, really isn't. You know? And Joe Rogers definitely is selling us out, and I feel bad. Because, you know what? If Judy were here, she'd crucify him.
Well, I don't know, and I don't feel comfortable with that kind of talk either. Because I, quite frankly, don't think I don't think any one of us has a final decision on this. I don't think that this is in the hands of any of us to make this decision. I really don't.
Somebody made the decision at SAMHSA.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is I don't think any of us are in that position. So I think to assault any of us who are in the process of this, as if they had some kind of pull as to this happening, I just don't think that that's, I mean, that's just me, but I don't know.
I can't see how people can be okay with it. I mean, to me, it goes against everything you stand for. And to have a guy come in who's Mr. Checkup from the neck up, and there's not one piece of evidence to support his claims. And on top of that, he backed Murphy. So you're going to truly now let a fox in the hen house. That's what you've done. You've let a fox, so when there are no hens left, because foxes actually like hens, they're pretty tender meat to them. Don't blame anybody but yourselves, because that was like when we started letting mommy in the door. Same difference.
Right, and what I'm saying to you, okay, they're different people. Brian Patrick Kennedy and Patrick J. John Kennedy are two different people. Thank you, Sarah.
Okay.
People are sending me information online all over the place. But what I'm saying is I don't think that whether it be Joe Rogers or whoever, I don't think any of them are the people who have made this decision or who have the power to make this decision. I think that they're in positions of, I don't think that they're the ones who said, oh, let's have Patrick Kennedy come speak. But who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. 267-521-0167. I feel like I'm really giving benefit of the doubt here, but maybe not. Where did Lester just disappeared into the abyss? Hopefully you'll call back. I think that there's something to be said for the lack of power that people actually have, even in these highest positions, as if there's something that they could do. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. But certainly the people who were involved in the movement in the 1960s and 70s, and all the way up until the federal government buying out the International Conference on Human Rights and Psychiatric Oppression, have a very different view of what it is that needs to be happening than people who perhaps got involved after that and weren't really exposed to the psychiatric survivor movement, and certainly not the anti-psychiatry movement. And so I think we need to keep on airing these issues and asking these questions and inviting people to come and speak and share their piece and say, you know, what it is that they believe on these terms. But, you know, the bottom line is Patrick J. Kennedy, who will be conferencing the Alternatives Conference, co-founded an organization for brain research called One Mind, and he describes his book as a portrait of mental health care, politics, research, and activism, according to the Washington Post. And when you go to the One Mind website, onemind.org, its tagline, get this, its tagline, alternatives, this is alternatives, its tagline is a, I just lost its tagline, a global movement for brain health or something like that. And, you know, and it's the rich and famous, and who is this? Why the brain? There's an article that says, why the brain? The score is 600-0. With over 600 identified disorders and diseases of the brain, the collective neuroscience community has not cured a single one, and better treatments leading to improved patient outcomes are lagging the rest of medicine. Just as alarming, there have been little quantification of the global burden of brain disorders, and given the rise of number of global citizens entering into the highest risk period of their lives, the impact could prove to be destabilizing both in economic terms and in social terms in the coming decade. Adding to the problem, few coalitions have emerged strong enough to break down the continued focus on individual brain diseases and unable to build consensus on focusing on the brain at large. With no diagnostics, no comprehensive disease models, and little sharing of best practices in the care of our patients, the current score will remain unaltered if unchallenged. This is on One Mind. This is Patrick Kennedy is the co-founder of this organization. Given the environment, it reads, it is surprising that current funding levels are not proportional to the level of disease that exists. Even more surprising is the inefficient allocation of resources, duplication of effort, and lack of validation and disbursement of allocated funds. Adding to the problem, current regulatory and patent laws inhibit progress as evidenced by the diminishing number of pharmaceutical companies investing in drugs for the central nervous system, a phenomenon resulting in a, quote, dry pharmaceutical pipeline within which no emerging drugs are within reach of our patients. The article continues, further complicating the challenge, a closed culture of exclusivity has emerged over time wherein the current system of incentives does not support cross-institutional data sharing with the scientific research community. Although measurable progress in team science is foreseeable, the vast majority of research is conducted in the traditional, linear, limited, and painstaking time incentive world, wherein one insightful scientific breakthrough takes several years to transit the publication process, and the sharing of pertinent data is rarely accomplished. On the policy and legislative fronts, political prioritization is non-existent, insurance parity not universal, and reimbursement models for diagnostics and therapeutics inconsistent, resulting in gridlock across the board. Add to that, privacy policy is prohibiting data sharing across the international boundaries as well as within governmental agencies like DOD, the Veterans Administration, and so Department of Defense, Veterans Administration, and National Institute of Health. And the resulting situation is one that explains why no cure has been found and why the community is decades behind the cardio and cancer communities. All told, the challenge is daunting, yet not unsurpassable. And this is just part of the fraud. Why haven't they found anything? Because there's nothing to find. Why is that not the reality? So the mission of One Mind is an independent 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to benefiting all affected by brain illness and injury through fostering fundamental changes that will radically accelerate the development and implementation of improved diagnostics, treatments, and cures while eliminating the stigma. One Mind believes in open science principles and creates global public-private partnerships between governmental, corporate, scientific, and philanthropic communities. The vision of One Mind is mankind lives free of the personal, social, and economic ravages of brain disease. I don't know. If you'd like to talk about this or anything else, the number to call is 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. So this is what we're doing. The Alternatives Conference is having Patrick J. Kennedy, who is co-founder of this One Mind organization, Diagnose, Treat, Cure, One Mind. As the keynote speaker opening up the Alternatives Conference. So meet our founders. So it's two people, Garen Staglin, even if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, I apologize, and the Honorable Patrick J. Kennedy. So Patrick J. Kennedy's bio on onemind.org reads that Patrick, the co-founder of One Mind, served 16 years in the U.S. House of Representatives and is predominantly known as the author and lead sponsor of the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act of 2008. The dramatic piece of legislation provides access to mental health treatment to tens of millions of Americans who were previously denied care. Congressman Kennedy has authored and co-sponsored dozens of bills to increase the understanding and treatment of neurological and psychiatric disorders, including the National Neurotechnology Initiative Act, the Genomics and Personalized Medicine Act, the Combat PTSD Act, and the Alzheimer's Treatment and Caregiver Support Act. He is a winner of the American College of Neuropsychopharmacology Distinguished Service Award, the Society for Neuroscience Public Service Award, the Autism Society of America Congressional Leadership Award, the Depression and Bipolar Support Paul Wellston Mental Health Award, and the Epilepsy Foundation Public Service Award. He is also the founder of the Congressional Down Syndrome Caucus and the 21st Century Healthcare Caucus. Garen Staglin, the other co-founder and co-chairman of One Mind and the co-founder, president, and trustee of the International Mental Health Research Organization, during the past 18 years, IMHRO and Staglin's Music Festival for Mental Health events have raised more than $140 million for mental health charities and research. He is also co-founder and president of Bring Change to Mind, a nonprofit organization dedicated to eliminating the stigma of mental illness. Garen has spent more than 30 years building and starting companies in the financial services and payment industries as a private equity investor and philanthropist. He currently serves on the board of directors of Silicon Valley Bank, EXL Services, Envoice Payments, Profit Velocity Solutions, and Specialized Bicycle Corporation. He is also a senior advisor to FTV Capital. He earned his Bachelor of Science in Engineering from UCLA and MBA from Stafford Graduate School of Business. He is a recipient of the Gold Spike Award, Stanford University's highest award for volunteer services, and the UCLA College of Letters and Science Fellows Award. Gary and his wife Shari and their children, Brandon and Shannon, are founders of the Staglin Family Vineyard in Rutherford, California. Actively involved for 25 years in the wine industry, the Staglin's motto is great wine for great causes. And through the operation of their winery, business interests, and support of various charitable causes, they have indeed lived up to that philosophy. In the last 10 years, causes they have chaired or donations from their wine have generated more than $750 million. One mind. If you'd like to talk to me and maybe not leave me talking to myself in public for much longer, the number to call in is 267-521-0167. That's 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line, the number to call is 855-346-3351. Let's see here. Area code 646, your line is open.
Hey, Lauren, it's Sarah. How you doing?
Good, Sarah. Thanks for the information before.
Oh, sure, no problem. Hey, I just,
Hello? Sarah, are you there? Oh. Sarah, I can see your light, but it's not coming on. Let's see if we do this and if we set this up again. Sarah, are you there? Maybe you have yourself on mute. I'm not sure. But I'm going to talk, and when you come back, your mic is open. So when you're there, if you want to come back in at any point, please do. But I think that this one mind thing is we really need to watch out about this. You know, when they say on their page on that Patrick Kennedy co-founded, that is going to be keynoting this year's opening alternatives keynote, brain disorders affect more than 60 million Americans. That is more than 1 in 5 Americans suffering from mental illness or brain injury. From autism and Alzheimer's disease to traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress, brain ailments cost the U.S. close to $1 trillion each year. Insufficient funding for research, slowness in developing new effective treatments, and the extreme social stigma associated with brain disease and injury result in this being the biggest challenge to healthcare today. Cancer and heart disease affect far fewer people, yet receive 3 to 5 times more funding support than brain diseases. And so it's hard to tell. You know, it seems that there's definitely an economic edge that's happening here. These brain diseases are costing us close to $1 trillion each year. It'd be interesting to know where that statistic came from and how they exactly broke that down, because there are, like, drugs that make, like, $7 trillion a year. So how does that all fit in terms of this? So I'm continued to be bothered by how this can be the person who is selling the idea of alternatives. You know, unless it's you know, like Murphy is pushing the right to treatment, that we have the right to treatment, that our rights aren't really about our human rights or our right to refuse or our right to be free of torture and substances and devices that are damaging to us, but more our right to be, quote-unquote, treated. It is going to be just one continued party here. Area code 646.
Hey, Lauren, Sarah again, trying to just somehow I must have disconnected myself. So I just caught the last part of kind of what you were talking about. So but didn't know how much of my question that you all heard or thought was even interesting. So
I don't think we heard it. All I heard was that you were there, and then your line got cut. So
oh, that's not so great. Bummer.
No. So if you asked the question and you didn't hear me answering it, maybe that's why, because I didn't hear it. So what's your question?
So, I mean, for me, I always love to hear what ideas people have for like an alternative to the alternatives, because I think for me, one of the things that's really challenging is there's like boatloads of stuff that's wrong, and if I don't have like another way of going about it that makes more sense than the stuff that's stupid, then I still am just stuck with the stuff that's stupid. So I'm trying to think of like what, you know, creatively, how do we respond to the Patrick Kennedy debacle, if we want to call it that, or how do we harness, is there anything that's like worthwhile in what Patrick Kennedy stands for that we can use to create a dialogue that might actually lead to change in his views or his organization? I don't know. Those are questions I have. If anybody has thoughts on that kind of thing.
Well, I'm definitely open to seeing if anybody's got any thoughts. Like, you know, Sarah, I think that you're just so much like Gandhi, because you're just always wanting. you're much better than I. you really are. I just don't have it in me. But I do see what you're saying, and I do hear what you're saying. Is there a possibility that there's something that we could be doing better? That what would we put there in place? And I think, you know, that if we went back to, like, the Declaration of Principles from 1982, it was that we would stop, you know, putting this stuff forward as if it was, you know, we would eliminate the fraud of it. We would say that we wanted an end to all psychiatric interventions. We would say that we wanted an end to all jargon that is put forward to make this, like, to seem like it's actually medical. And I think that, you know, the One Mind organization, for example, does on some levels conflate the ideas, because they're lumping things like traumatic brain injuries in with things that are like psychiatric diagnoses, right? And so they're two very different things.
Absolutely.
And certainly for anybody who's surviving a traumatic brain injury and having to rebuild and learn how to live with that again, that's a very different situation than these fraudulent psychiatric diagnoses. So I think that that's one problem that's,
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just think it's one problem that's clearly there inside of this whole thing.
Yes.
But from what I understand from this Washington Post article about Kennedy's memoir that's due out next year, that what he's planning on talking about is his own quote unquote, you know, mental illness and drug issues, addiction, his own.
Interesting.
And I think that if alternatives was really alternatives, they would not be having people leading off the conference justifying the field of psychiatry. And so when people use the language of accepting a quote-unquote mental illness or a psychiatric label or, you know, any of that stuff, it's not alternative. It's not about an alternative model to what is traditionally looked at. It's still operating in a very much a medical model of illness.
So, and this I agree with. I think the medical model does not perhaps doesn't work for anybody, but it certainly doesn't work for many of us. And at the same time, I can see average Joe citizens saying, and this is where I'd really love for our movement to struggle a bit, because I can see average Joe citizens saying, you know, we're still scared. You know, there's still violence happening. If we don't have the psychiatric model, what do we have?
But I think that's part of the fraud. The idea that people who have psychiatric histories are any more violent than people who don't is part of the fraud, and the idea that psychiatry has some kind of way to control for violence is a fraud, and that psychiatry could predict who is going to be violent is a fraud. And so the average person, unfortunately, is living underneath all of these misconceptions that are nicely tailored and presented to them by these, you know, big industries. You know what I mean? Like the idea that, right? I mean, like we were talking about the other night, that it puts mental health professionals in the role of legal enforcement.
So, I mean, exactly. But, and here's again, part of my struggle is when I hear our movement say, okay, so, you know, throw all this stuff out because it's a fraud. And I agree that it certainly isn't how I would like to understand, it isn't how I actually do understand the issues. So I have to agree that the model that we have is not the model that I use. It's not the way that I think about human suffering. It's not the way that I think about human distress or human violence. But at the same time, if I'm the average person out there who hasn't thought about these issues very much, and the one thing that I'm hanging on to that sort of gives me hope that my world could be safer is this thing called psychiatry and called, you know, the Murphy Bill and called, you know, community treatment and, you know, and compassionate treatment and all this other stuff and all this nice language, and I'm holding, and so that, and then you tell me it's a fraud and you take that security blanket away from me, I'm left with nothing and no guidance. And so it's like the gap that what, you know, until somebody gives me a different security blanket to hang on to, I'm probably going to hang on to the one that's in front of me.
Well, okay, but here's like from the Declaration of Principles, right? Number 19, we believe that people should have the right to live in any manner or lifestyle that they choose. 20, we believe that suicidal thoughts and or attempts should not be dealt with as psychiatric or legal issues. 21, we believe that alleged dangerousness, whether to oneself or others, should not be considered grounds for denying personal liberty, and that only proven criminal acts should be the basis for such denial. And then even then, we need to address what's going on. 22, we believe that when persons charged with crime should be tried for their alleged criminal acts with due process of law, and that psychiatric professionals should not be given expert witness status in criminal proceedings or courts of law. There have been, and this is what was developed out of what the federal government bought out and now calls alternatives. Maybe this one will answer some of your questions. Number 27, we believe that voluntary networks of community alternatives to the psychiatric system should be widely encouraged and supported. Alternatives such as self-help or mutual support groups, advocacy rights groups, co-op houses, crisis centers, and drop-ins should be controlled by the users themselves to serve their needs while ensuring their freedom, dignity, and self-respect.
This is Lauren. This
hey,
is
Yvonne.
Yvonne. Yeah, the thing about it is that it's just more than the dangerousness. What happened is, I don't like using these words, but co-opted. What happens is, why is it can't people get what they need without having to subscribe to a label? And what has happened is that a lot of the good self-help programs, in order to seek funds, they have to say that they're doing this for mental illness. So in a sort of like a way, people have been co-opted because they want to go after the dollars. And in going after the dollars, they themselves have started to say that we have to talk the language. I remember Larry from West Virginia. It was a alternative that was in Atlanta, Georgia. I think it was 2003 or 2004. And he was on the stage. This was one of the open plenaries. And, you know, we were having that discussion about the word consumer. And he was saying, well, we use this word because that's the word we have to use to get the money. And I think what's happened is it's gone to such an extent now that that's what's happened. People have to, they don't have to, but they've decided they have to use the language in order to get the money. So,
yes.
You know, it's sort of like, what is it, they sold your brother's robe for 20 pieces of silver. It's sort of like that. So it's more than just the dangerousness. Some of the people that are putting on alternatives and the groups that come, the groups that are able to finance people to come to alternatives, usually it's through state, and they have this, this is the message that they say. So I came on a little late, but I heard you talk about someone being a plenary speaker. And it's the same thing for, I think, for Patrick Kennedy. All these other groups, whether it's brain injury, Alzheimer's, they all compete for the same dollars. And we really haven't built up the network of natural supports that people need. And I think that's really the heart of what's happened is that people have got large organizations now with staff that want to get paid, and they're just
for example, I hear what you're saying, but what about like the traumatic brain injuries that psychiatry is causing? What about the brain damage? Like, where is that in one mind? The brain damage and traumatic brain injuries that psychiatry is causing by shooting electricity through people's brains or lobotomizing people or putting vagus nerve stimulators in or any of this other stuff or the drugs.
I agree with you 100%. It seems almost as if what has happened is if you put something under psychiatry. And have you ever heard of anybody getting a malpractice suit for psychiatry?
No, I think that's part of what's so ridiculous. I also, please all stay on the line. Area code 609, your line is open.
Yeah. 609?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Jason. That's what I wanted to add, too. I was thinking just before you brought it up that, you know, ECT is it should be stressed that it is a brain injury. It's a closed-head electrical injury, so that, you know, this addition of the TBI or whatever is just ridiculous and it's disgusting to me. So, but, and also, you know, there are proven, you know, alternatives. Lauren Mosier, and there are many, many proven alternatives. And if someone commits, you know, as far as the danger, dangerousness to self or others, if someone commits a violent crime, you know, we have a criminal justice system. So there are alternatives. And they may take more time to work, but they've been shown to work, and that people can learn to, you know, people can recover with assistance, and they don't, you know, necessarily need drugs or mechanical interventions or, you know, long-term lockups and restraint.
That's true, because there are many people who have a intervention for a short period of time, and they just reject it, and they're never heard from again until maybe something comes up, and they said, well, you got this service back then, and we had a diagnosis of anxiety or paranoid something other, and they weren't even aware of it. Just commonly happens to battered women. They will come in and want some kind of help, maybe to leave their spouse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they'll send the person off for counseling. And what they say is, and I know this one person very close to me, that I wanted to get some help so I could leave your father and go to live mm-hmm. in another and get an apartment or something like this. And they wanted to send me somewhere to get counseling. And the counseling might have helped, but my first need was secure safety. So sometimes people want, they need help or want help, and it comes with conditions. And those conditions are that you get into some kind of treatment, you know, whether it's housing, whether it's you might need some help for a child, for tutoring and stuff, for a child that's having maybe some learning issues. But they make you say you have to kind of accept, to get one thing, you have to accept psychiatry.
Yeah.
And I think what's happening, there's no place if you just want, if you just want help to go to school, if you just want help with relationships or something like this, it's almost like, well, in order for you to take the help, you got to accept the label. And whatever other interventions we think are best for you, and that might mean chemical interventions, because we really don't want to sit down and talk to you for an hour, but two or three, you figure this out.
If full informed consent is possible and people agree to that and find it useful, okay. But you know, that's the problem with full informed consent. I don't think it will ever happen. How can they honestly promote these drugs? It's all propaganda. I mean, all this stuff is just so much propaganda and marketing, and we hear it over and over and over again. It's been going on for, you know, two centuries. So it's I don't know how to, you know, I don't know what to, I have no, you know, I don't know how to break that cycle, but, you know, and I just wanted to also comment before I go on Patrick Kennedy. I just find, you know, his oratory and all, and I just find it's like chilling. I've listened to him speak, you know, in a bunch of different settings, and I don't know too much about alternatives, but I don't really understand why he's you know, on the forefront there. He's been invited. I don't see him as a promoter of alternatives at all.
Well, I don't know.
And I said that, but
I think you could talk to him in someone's living room in November in Washington.
Yeah.
And I would like to get some information about that, because he didn't seem to us. He came and spoke for a fundraiser, and he didn't seem to be, well, his talk was not, didn't seem to be so draconian, you know. I heard Lauren, he wants a checkup from the neck up.
Yeah.
I know he was going.
It's just
but
a style, I guess. I
seeing that, I mean,
he supports a mental illness model, and his organization that he co-founded is all about brain illnesses, and he is not alternatives. There's nothing alternative. Do you know what I mean? Like, he is not, you know, a person who's going to be. He's trying to get people to invest in more drugs and more brain research.
Mm-hmm.
He's not somebody who's
he repeats over and over, you know, these are medical illnesses, you know. They just repeat these things. He repeats it over and over again.
Well, he's a keynote at the NAMI, too, this year as well.
So, Yvonne.
So he's making the rounds, and he was a keynote. I think he's a keynote at the, what's the other one? The behavioral something, community, whatever. Well, he's just making rounds.
Yeah. So, Yvonne was talking earlier about, you know, the issue of for example, battered women going and saying, hey, I want help to get out of this abusive situation. And I want help to get out of this abusive situation, and people say, here, you can have counseling, you can go to and it reminds me of a Bible verse in Christianity that says, you know, when Jesus is asking this rhetorical question, and he says, if you go to God for bread, would he give you a snake? And it's like, you bet. Mm-hmm. Maybe not God, but certainly the U.S. government will. So,
that's great.
And even all
that is a snake
will,
wrapped around that thing, right?
Samson.
I tell you, this is, if you listen to what I was saying before, some of the things that we do. For example, I have no drop-in center and no alternative really services other than maybe what I get from RAP or something else. We don't have that here where I live. And the thing about it, it seems as though the people that really are absorbed in mental health services don't do as well. Not so much on the mental health services. They got to have case manager, doctors, or whatever else.
We've got all that traditional stuff where I am, and I'm in kind of a remote area in South Jersey that doesn't. It's not like North Jersey, but it's more rural. But we're bringing. We've got a drop-in in every county, well, a self-help center, and we're bringing in Hearing Voices. I'm going to facilitate that And we have informed choices. And, you know, when we bring this stuff up, most of the people there, at least, that I've met in my area, they can't even understand these concepts. They're so, you know, mired in the traditional mental health system that when we talk about these concepts, it's like a foreign language. I mean,
but
so
you're really sick,
we're trying,
you know.
And I missed your name. Who was the gentleman who's speaking?
This is Jason.
Jason, thank you.
Yeah, hi. Sarah?
Yes, Sarah.
Hi. Yeah.
So,
but the support groups and things like Hearing Voices, they've been around for a while. And I'm just saying that, you know, what has happened is some of these things have been monetized. And in order to get payment, if you go, as a president of a little small nonprofit, if you go to Foundation Center or any place and you try to put something in for mental illness, you're not going to find money for that. You'll find money for workforce development. You'll find money for health. And I think what has happened is that these things have been monetized and people go to where the money is. Like people said, what's his name? Willie Sutton said he robbed banks because that's where the money is. Those people are going to mental health and they ask for, and they require that you use their language. And so if you don't have some other way of doing it, then after a while it's about, they are the payors.
Yes.
And they don't pay and that's part of the problem. Like people talk about the peer specialists or whatever else. And some of these things were good ideas to have people as change agents, but the fact is that they've been co-opted. Now, Pastor Kennedy, he is a former congressperson. He knows these people on the Hill.
Yeah, because he's got a common struggle. You know, a common struggle. You know, that's the name of his book coming out in 2015, A Common Struggle, A Very Personal Journey Through the Past and Future of Mental Illness and Addiction.
Well, I know one of his family members. I can give him a phone and call. All these things that you're bringing up for weeks, I'm going to call and ask her to give me the lowdown on this because it's, you know, like I said, the man is making the rounds. He definitely would have some influence, but he sat up and told us. He says, people in Congress, they will tell you privately. They have family members that struggle, but they could not be part of, affordable health care or have, making sure they had behavioral health carve-outs or whatever it is. So it's some of this is about the money and using the language for that. And I agree with you, Lauren, we should get away from using their language.
Yeah.
But,
it's not only about
you...
using their language. The idea that Patrick Kennedy is leading off the Alternatives Conference as the opening keynote is ludicrous. What?
He's a consumer. So why? He's a high-profile peer.
Right.
Well, that's the whole point of why Alternatives is not... You know, that's the issue that people who identify as psychiatric survivors have.
Committee, I have, not this year, but I, on two occasions, I've been on the Alternatives Committee. And it wouldn't be just one person. Some people must have suggested on that committee that they had him. I mean, they haven't had Mary Ellen Copeland as a keynote, but they, you know, having Patrick Kennedy as a keynote. So it must have been more than one person, numerous people that set it. Because the way they do it, I'm just telling you, this is the way they do it, they have a committee of people.
Yes.
They have a monthly call, or unless they change it. I know the Joe Rogers Shop is doing it this year. I doubt it. Doubt if it was. And people submit names. They have a lot of discussion about it. So some people must have wanted him to come. Plus, as a keynote, Alternatives does not pay you. Everybody that comes as a speaker or plenary or workshop, you come there on your own dime. They must, you know, or there might be some donation. He has a foundation of his own. We don't know what's behind it. He could have easily given some money for some scholarships for people to come. I can't see them just out of the, they may not see them that way.
So here's, I love Yvonne's conversation about and talking about language, because and I also, I can't remember if it was Yvonne or Jason who was saying, gosh, people come in from the mental health community and they don't really have any conception of anything outside of mental health.
Right.
And I think we owe it as a peer community to develop our own conception of what's going on. And I think we can do that, and I think we can do it like just like the AA people did in really simple, understandable terms.
Well, about
this is why people get sick.
It's gotten away
this
from
is,
that.
This is why people go – this is what happens. You don't need – to think about it in terms of a genetic disorder. You don't need to think about it in terms of all this complicated brain physiology. You don't need to think about it in terms, you don't need a master's degree or a medical license to think about this stuff. It's pretty simple. It's pretty basic what goes on in people's lives that makes for bad shit happening.
Yeah, Sarah, have you by any chance heard of, there actually is a program that exists, a 12-step program for mental health that started in Australia in the 50s, and they do use it here. It's not very popular, but
is that Emotions Anonymous, or is it something else?
No, it's called GROW, G-R-O-W, community.
Cool.
It's like a community mental health thing. I don't think it just hasn't caught on. They do use it. They do have GROW groups, and I attend them sometimes, but it's 12-step it's similar to AA or something.
Sure, cool.
But it could, I think it could be revamped and updated because the literature is the language is outdated, and I think it should be
You have to understand one thing. All those people, when you go to alternatives now, there aren't anybody. The people in the front of the room, they all have MS's, W's, and whatever else, and PhDs. You don't have people like me that just have lived experience that maybe survived I don't have like the 18 hospitalizations that some people have. But all of those people, they have masters and PhDs now. So even when I went to a peer specialist caucus that they had, it's been about 2 years since I've been to alternatives, but they had, when they were talking about the competencies and whatever else, I was surprised that as many of these people that are supposed to be certified peer specialists, they had master's degrees in other fields.
They started bringing in the
creeps from their discipline. And you had to fight. Myself and Rita Conese, and I even remember a person from my city getting up and says, well, I was a case manager for 20-some years. And now they bring all that stuff in there. So they don't have respect. Somebody else who has lived experience and has done well can learn from these concepts. And then other people tell me, well, Yvonne, I tried to do this, but when I wanted to do more, I had to go back to school.
Yeah.
So, you know, your lived experience, we say that was the golden token, but then you turn around, you can't do anything with it.
Makes so much sense, Yvonne. So here is a wondering and a challenge, because I think one of our problems is that right now the only language and the explanations that we have for why people will have distress are all explanations that we are borrowing. It's kind of like you have to have a master's degree to even join the conversation, and I don't think it's that complicated. I think it's pretty simple. I think it's like the average Joe could understand it. But as a movement, we need to actually come forward and say this is what we, as people with lived experience who have been through this, this is what we think is going on. With this, and this is why people get distressed, or this is why people go to the outer edges of the human spectrums of behavior. This is what's happening inside of people. It's not that complicated. Your average your neighbor can understand it. You don't need a master's degree. We can all talk about it.
Because we have all
been disqualified from talking about it by the people with the master's degree. We can't even render an opinion on the stuff that's going on with us in our own lived experience until we have a master's or a PhD.
But what I'm saying is people do it.
Yeah, we need like a common language.
They're trained from some low-level peer specialists, but what they do is whether they have a two-week or a six-month training, what they do is they bring in all the information on, like, the RAP, the Sure Needs Official Peer Support, QAM, all these other pathways or whatever else. But then they bring in the modules and they tell you, well, they give them all the diagnostic language because they tell you, well, you're going to write notes now. And you have to, this is the way the professionals talk. And when you're on the team, you've got to talk the same kind of way. And I wasn't taught that way. I used my own language, and they start. You use it long enough, they start picking it up.
Yeah,
okay,
like
so
from the Declaration of
other...
Principles. I want to just like the Declarations of Principles.
Thanks, Lauren.
The plain English is anger. The psychiatric jargon is hostility. The plain English is enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. The jargon is mania.
Yes.
Joy. Euphoria, fear, paranoia, sadness, unhappiness, depression, visual, spiritual experience, hallucination, nonconformity, schizophrenia, unpopular belief, delusion. This has been for decades that this conference has robbed what was done for decades before, because this was 10 years into the international conference when this came out, 1982, and in 1985, the federal government bought this conference out. And wow. Back then, what people called it was the alternative to the movement. And over the years, this has become about creating jobs in this peer industry where people are kept in poverty, kept under the guns of these people, totally being watched themselves, being mandated to be on drugs. If they step out of line, they get reinstitutionalized all over again, anybody who's working in these peer positions. And then they climb their way up.
After 2003, 2004, I think that was the watershed moment when some people discovered that they could make all this billable money. And I tell you this, no matter where you go, there are some people that make money in these things. They're usually the executive director or the project manager. They will make money. The rest of the people, if they make some money, they may make a little bit above minimum wage.
Yeah,
if
sorry,
they get to be a state
employee. They make between $24,000 and $32,000. I said that's 2 to 3 times more than an adjunct professor makes. Like, this is... But it's keeping people in poverty. It puts people in the idea that they're quote unquote peers, where all we're doing is ratting out other people and trying to silence, keep ourselves silent and just keep ourselves out of the institutions and turning people in. And where you've got these people who are working in quote unquote peer positions where they're turning in, convincing people to give them their urine, or showing up at people's houses and making sure that they take their medication, or whatever else other bull that they have us doing. Mm-hmm. This is a far cry from the International Conference on Human Rights and Psychiatric Oppression that the federal government broke out, that bought out. And having Patrick Kennedy as, in cahoots with Murphy and all these other people as their opening keynote just shows that this is part of the ultimate problem that is being experienced.
I wouldn't put Kennedy in the same cloth with Murphy. There is a difference. And sometimes you got to kind of work with some people. You know, I can...
He's supporting. Patrick Kennedy is supporting H.R. 3717.
Tell me it's not so.
Yeah.
No, tell me it's not so.
So here, let me bump in here, because here's another challenge for our movement.
Oh, you can't tell me that's not true.
That's my understanding.
Well, I will be on the phone tomorrow. It's not too late. I might be tonight asking about this.
You go, girl. You get him. You get him.
I just don't. Murphy may be getting some visitors very soon.
Here for me is the issue. The power of our movement always was as a human rights movement. It was as one human being to another, saying you might have had these experiences, but I've had them too, and we're still human, and we still belong, and we still have the right to be a part of this human race and a part of this human society as much as anybody else. That's a human rights movement. It's not a medical movement. And what we have had happen is that our role has been shifted from a human role that said that we could act toward each other any damn way we pleased, and we could define our role in any damn way we wanted, because that's what it means to be human, and that's like what it means to have human rights. And if we have been changed from that to a medical role, which is basically a straitjacket role, which is as much a straitjacket for the professionals in some ways, as well as for the patients. And so,
well, there's a difference between being a firefighter and being a terrorist.
Our movement by peers saying, "Oh, hey, sure, we'll get all this medical training, and we'll come in as medical people speaking a medical language, and we'll come into a healthcare role." And what we need to do is reclaim a role as a human role that has nothing to do with medical stuff, that has to do with one human being to another, saying, you belong, and I'll vouch for you, your humanity as a human being, based on my status as a human being.
Well, it was supposed to be change agents. Part of that, see, some of that has been eroded because, like I said, it came a form for people who maybe were in other areas of professionals. Because, you know, like I remember when we first started having, they said they had people on act teams and they had peers. And people were saying, well, who is the peer on the act team? We don't. They said, oh, they have them. But then when we looked and uncovered it, maybe it was somebody who had seen a psychiatrist as a teenager, you know, a few times or whatever else. Or, oh, but you can't disclose. Well, how are they going to act as a peer on an act team if no one knows that they're a peer? And so it just became a way of them to hire people who didn't quite have, they didn't have an MSW, they didn't have an RN, maybe they had some college, you know, or degree. And that became a way. And that's how these people crept in who maybe were managers for years or occupational therapists, whatever.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, if all of this was about, supposedly a big deal was that people were openly disclosing, and that you would use your, when appropriate, your learned experience to help to coach people to recovery. That's how the concept that I had when we were doing it was like, now this was the, and that you would be a change agent, because when you were on the treatment team, being the person with the lived experience, you were the most knowledgeable person. If you acted as an amateur or part-time case manager, you were the most inexperienced. You know, if you kept true to your role, then you were the go-to person for the knowledge.
Wow.
So, Yvonne, what I hear you talking about is not mental health recovery as much as it's human rights recovery. I mean,
well,
you're
it's
actually...
it's a human rights issue because you don't have, in the way that I was taught about peer support, you don't have that power dynamic that's there. You're kind of learning together, and you're figuring out how you come to discover what you know.
Yeah.
You might help people with resources, but you're not trying to change their value system or anything like that.
And we're going to pick up, we only have like 2 minutes left, so I just want to say we're going to pick up on this again tomorrow night at 9 p.m., and I hope people will join in the conversation. But I just want to be clear that there is a video of Tim Murphy, Patrick Kennedy, and Dr. Fulatori, that can be found on the AEI, American Enterprise Institute website from March 28th, 2014, from 10 to 11:30 a.m., and under the event summary, it says, former Congressman Patrick Kennedy, D. Rhode Island, emphasized that Americans must approach mental health as a treatable ailment akin to cancer or diabetes rather than treat it as a separate and unequal plight. Kennedy echoed Representative Murphy's emphasis on quick action and preventative measures, adding that proper funding is crucial. Dr. Tory corroborated the treatment shortage, referring to an upcoming report from the Treatment Advocacy Center that elaborates on the significant numbers gap between mental health patients in prisons and jails versus those in hospitals. Finally, Dr. Jeffrey Lieberman drew on his insight into mental health care systems to encourage taking a public health approach to mental health care. If you have a tip or would like to be on the Talk with Tenney show, please call 718-273-8708, 24 hours a day, except when we are on air. 718-273-8708. Jason, Sarah, Yvonne, and Lester, and everybody else who's out there listening and who wants to call in, I'm going to ask you to keep on speaking out. And until we talk to you next time, talk to you soon. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night.
Thanks, Mark. Night.